welcome to Bunta Vista. It's a bonus episode, and once again, you're stuck in a hot air balloon with just me and Theo. Oh, no.
Oh, God.
Just a hot air balloon. I feel like we've maybe done hot air balloon before. Who knows? Back when. If you can find an episode where I opened by suggesting that we were all in a hot air balloon together, you'll get some kind of prize.
Although it is very, I feel like, brand appropriate for us to get stuck in a hot air balloon like multiple times.
Yeah.
Just keeps happening. Probably quick content warning if you don't like this sort of stuff, people getting killed in hot air balloons. Just fast forward a couple of minutes. When I proposed to Caitlin, it was on a trip we took down to like northern New South Wales, and we went hot air ballooning. But like 1 week before we were set to go, they had that big accident in New Zealand where it hit the power lines.
Oh.
And the whole hot air balloon went up in flames, and people were left with this awful choice of, you know, either going up in flames or jumping out, which to me is like, you could not describe a more nightmarish situation to me.
Well, and it's the 9/11 people.
Yeah. It's a lot. And so I'm just like, I'm not good with heights, I would say. I'm not good with... There are a lot of things that I am, like, instinctually afraid of. I've got a big old lizard brain, Andrew. Got to tell you, it's like mostly just full of fears, and one of them is
just fears.
Just fears, and one of those fears is being on fire, and one of the other fears is falling from great heights. And I'm in no great height, great rush to combine the two. But we still went, and it was lovely. Although I gripped the side of the basket with just like sweaty white knuckles the entire time. There was a very flamboyant French man, or French affected man, driving the balloon. I feel like that man found his calling. Good on him, Francois, or whatever your name is. I don't know.
Whatever you changed your name to.
That's right.
So I went to a thing on the weekend, which was like a trivia night, a charity trivia night thing that my friend was going to. And she invited me and Ella along. And it was like for greyhound-related stuff, because she has adopted a bunch of greyhounds, and she has one of them as a service dog, and she does lots of stuff and is a very nice person. And so the least I could do was go to the pub and drink as many pints as I could while someone else was looking after my kids.
Sure.
I don't know if I gave any form of money to charity in the course of doing this.
It's safe to assume you did.
I guess somehow. I don't know if they get a cut of all the beers I drank or anything. But anyway, so it was kind of a confusing setup, because it was sort of a mixed crowd, and the guy who was emceeing the evening had a real like auctioneer kind of vibe going, which makes sense because they were also auctioning things off for charity. And at one point, he was auctioning off a hot air balloon ride, and he went, "Ah, hot air balloon ride! It's the perfect way to murder your wife." And
cool.
Me and the lady I was sitting next to both went, said, I kind of feel like the days of casually joking about murdering your wife in front of a room full of people might be starting to pass us by.
They're certainly on their way out.
You'd hope so. But what was even more perplexing about all of this was that... I realized at some point, or somebody told me at some point, that this event was not like purely people who did greyhound rescues and all that sort of stuff. Like half of the people in the room were people who raced greyhounds and like train greyhounds and shit. And the other half are people who rescue greyhounds and rehome them.
The classic odd couple.
I was just like, what a weird cycle. Oh, so these guys abuse them and then you guys give them a home afterwards or something. It was,
Well, look, one couldn't exist without the other.
Very strange scenario.
So,
and my big contribution to the large table of people was that you had to name which actors had been the voices of famous cartoon characters from movies.
Mm. Hit me with one.
Oh, so the four that they had on the thing, because this was the one where they had a sheet of paper and you had to look at the pictures and see the thing. The first one was Barry Benson, as played by Jerry Seinfeld in the Bee Movie. Mm-hmm. One was...
So that's Jerry Seinfeld, yep.
That's
yep.
Jerry Seinfeld. Marty the Zebra from Madagascar,
mm-hmm.
as we all know, was played by Chris Rock.
Yep, so that one was played by Chris Rock, yep.
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 So I'm 2 for 2.
Dory from Finding Nemo, or uh-huh. possibly Finding Dory, if that's where you saw her.
Sure.
And she was
played by Chris Rock.
Ellen DeGeneres.
Ellen DeGeneres.
Yep, you got
yep,
that.
Yep, got it. Yep.
Spot on. And the one that nobody knew.
Mm-hmm.
Was whatever the name of the woolly mammoth from Ice Age is.
Yeah.
Who was played
absolutely. By Chris Rock.
By Ray Romano.
Oh.
Deborah. That's my
name. I've never watched a Everyone Loves Raymond episode in my life, so.
It's funny because his wife fucking hates him and he fucking hates his parents.
I see.
That's what's cool and funny about it.
Cool.
Yeah. So that was my big contribution, is that I knew that Ray Romano played an animated woolly mammoth at some point in his career. Congratulations to me.
Yeah. Good job, Andrew.
We did not win on the
night. I mean, I did pretty well on that too, so.
That's true. 4 for 4.
Four from four. But, you know.
That's pretty much perfect.
See, easy when you're not under that pressure.
Speaking of being under pressure.
Hmm.
We've got an article here about a man from Elwood. He's under pressure because his plan to put in a pool on his property has triggered, quote, absurd and pricey public open space contribution fees.
Now, Andrew, how much... We're reasonable people. We're kind of men of the soil, I guess they're always saying. How much would you pay? Okay, so for my part, I have to imagine wanting a pool in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Pools are dog shit. They're garbage maintenance holes to get wet in. I can get wet in my bath, Andrew. Them's the facts. But if you wanted a pool for some reason, how much would you pay for one?
I'd pay millions because I'm not a cheapskate like this guy.
Sure.
Complaining about all of his expenditure.
Uh-huh. But this guy is complaining that his pool is going to cost him $420,000.
$420,000, nice.
And that's the sex number. And you're kind of sitting there. It must be a very good pool. But that's not what's happened, is it, Andrew? This is just a true tragedy, I think, of the working man.
Yes, this is not the case. Interestingly, I mean, as we've been able to see recently playing out with, like, news stories about increasing Newstart and that kind of stuff, the media is very keen to portray working class people, unemployed people, people of not much means as often, like, very deceitful, trying to rip everybody off, trying to live high on the hog off your dollars. So it's always cool to see how these same papers kind of flip it around and try and act like a person like this. He's just a family man.
He's just an Aussie battler.
Just
isn't
an
he?
Aussie battler trying to do right by his family. And what happens? The nanny state comes in, puts the thumb screws on him. So let's see what he has to say here. Paul Jones has lived in his Ruskin Street home for nearly a decade.
Mm.
Last November.
Man of the people.
And last November, or living in a house for a whole 10 years. Good on him. Last November, he bought his neighbor's property,
huh,
Which is what we've all done from time to time.
Oh, you know, you go like trying to find some cupboard space to put your latest thing in. Yep. You don't want to throw out your Guitar Hero drums yet. So, you need something, somewhere for all this stuff, Andrew. So, why not just buy next door?
My next door neighbor's moving out. I've already bought my house and I've bought some houses for some other people because I didn't know what to do with all the money. So, I bought my neighbor's property. He says, with a view to renting out the house and freeing up more space in his own backyard to build a pool for his two young children to enjoy. It's not for himself, it's for his kids.
Poor children. Just, there's a photo on this article too. I don't know, you probably shouldn't pick on the kids, but they look like absolute shitheads. I don't like these kids. I don't like their attitude. They don't deserve a pool.
It is an absolutely classic photo to go with this article in the Herald Sun. It's the one we all know as human interest story where the photographer has asked you to look very...
Looks somber.
Just looks sullen. Just somber. You got to really look like someone has taken a big stinky shit in your bowl of cereal first thing in the morning. And they've asked you, how does it taste? How do you like it?
The photographer's raised the camera and then just before hitting the shutters said, private school fees are increasing.
Both kids wearing their private school.
Oh, they are too.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Again, just the... Read the room, buddy.
Hang on. All right. I knew I said I shouldn't pick on these kids, but...
Pick on them.
Is this kid wearing three fucking watches? Save some watches for the rest of us.
Yeah. You little swatch hogging motherfucker. God damn. So Paul Jones's plans hit a snag when he was told that shifting the fence line between the two lots would mean he would have to pay a public open space contribution, a whopping 5% of the total value of the property. Quote, I'm a family man wanting to put a pool in for his two kids. I'm not a developer trying to stick six townhouses on the block, he said. So, I'm glad that he can make the distinction between someone throwing around a fuckload of money to recarve up property lines to suit his own preferences as to whether or not it's just him doing it for himself and his shitty kids or it's a property developer doing it. It's almost as though he is, like, developing the property in some form.
Also, I'm a little... I'm a little at a loss with the numbers here. Now, I'm no maths man, but I know a thing or two about numeros. And they've said that they're going to be stung a $200,000 council fee. Now, this is... they've quoted that the public open space contribution is a whopping 5% of the total value of the property. Now, if I take that to be the entire fee, that means that the total value of the property is $4 million. Now, either their property is worth $4 million, in which case, fuck them, or... Harold Sun's trying to do a fast one on us here and vastly misrepresenting the numbers involved. I would say it's probably a combination of the two.
The Port Phillip Council Acting Mayor, Louise Crawford, said the need for the contribution was triggered because the site could be subdivided in the future. Quote, in this case, the council considers each lot could be further subdivided, which means an exemption does not apply, she said. Council took into account the large rear yards and that one of the lots was increasing in size to over 650 square meters. So, he's just bought the house next door to him and basically blasted his own fence line right out up to the very edge of that yard, and he's going to rent out that house with a smaller yard and have the giant yard for himself so that he can put in a fucking pool. The site has a frontage to a street and two constructed lanes, which could accommodate at least one additional dwelling in the future. But Mr. Jones said making assumptions about whether the property would be further subdivided in the future was an absurd basis for slapping him with the hefty levy. What, so I have to pay about $200,000 just in case in 50 years' time someone buys my property and builds another house on it? He said. There's no way known I'm planning to further subdivide it. Mr. Jones said he had already spent about $600,000 building a bungalow and garage in the rear of his property. And was planning on forking out even more for the pool and landscaping to help realize the family's forever home dream. I've just spent all this money to make this happen. How can the council seriously think I'm going to knock it all down, dig it all up and subdivide, he said. I suspect that they don't give a fuck.
Yeah, I would say that they just apply the same rules to everybody, but...
Yeah.
All right, so just imagine that you were faced with... And again, I don't know where the $420,000 number has come from. As always, they're extremely loose with the numbers where they want to be to make it sound as bad as they want it to. So I'm assuming that if you add up all of the... costs for the council fees, the landscaping, pool, and all of that, that they've somehow arrived at this $420,000 number. If you were faced with paying $420,000 for a pool for your two shitty kids who despise you to try and save your marriage from because you fucked your secretary or whatever, now, I don't know about you, Andrew, but I would simply not pay for the pool. I would simply just stop and also think about all my life choices that had led up to considering paying $420,000 for a large wet hole. But that's just me. I'm a simple man. I don't like pools, and I certainly like having $420,000 not spent on them. But this guy seems like... it's either he pays the council all of this money or someone comes to his house and shoots him in the head with a gun.
The two options on the table here.
Those are the two options. And I can't see another thing that he could do, maybe just continuing to live his life in his poolless house. Maybe take his kids... Look, his kids clearly need... socializing, take them to the public pool. I think it's like $2 entry. You can buy some Redskins. I don't know if they sell Redskins anymore because that's extremely racist, but we got away with it in the 90s, didn't we?
We sure did. Now, I should note here that it does say, Councillor Crawford said, now this is a point that we keep coming back to in a lot of these stories. Councillor Crawford said that public open space funds collected by the council were used to redevelop existing park and recreation facilities and buy new open space to meet the needs of the community.
Huh. So they're saying that if you put more people or more development onto a block, that you have to spend some money back into the community to make sure the community can continue to grow in a way that's sustainable?
Yes, and I think that also extends to, if in the case of this guy, you had constructed laneways between your properties and then you moved your fence line over the top of them so that that laneway no longer existed for the public, you can chip in.
But this guy doesn't live in the community, Andrew. He lives on his 605 square meter block. 650. Soon to have a pool. Who needs a community when you have a pool?
You have a pool that you will not be letting anybody from the neighborhood swim in.
No, certainly not.
So they said, she said that Mr. Jones had been given a permit to reconfigure the boundaries without requiring him to subdivide the land or pay into the contribution.
Huh.
But Mr. Jones said he wanted the pool to be on the title of his residence. I live here and I want that area to be part of my home. I don't want it to be part of the neighboring property, which I also own. I hope common sense can prevail here. And the first comment on this on the Herald Sun is, just put a gate in the fence. Put a gate in the fence. It's a lot cheaper than $200,000.
But that would require like having some sort of human relationship with the people that are renting from you. And this guy definitely is not up to that.
No, thank you.
Mm-mm, no, those people are scum. Renters.
Speaking of hideous shit stains, renting places out to people and exploiting others. Now, this is a story that I don't think you are across.
Oh.
But it's very similar. It's very similar in tone to the sushi pizza restaurant that we were reading about earlier.
Where the Sushitsa.
Where it's very obviously like a blonde, tanned Sydney private school boy with too much money and access to too many connections who's been given way too much leeway in his life to do all kinds of really dumb shit. So, this article from The Australian entitled, Clients Burned by Airbnb Hotshot, Callum Forbes.
God, I hate this guy already. That's a horrible name.
I'm going to put a photo. I'm going to send you a photo of him right now.
I think this is one of the listeners' favorite bits of the show where we're looking at something. Trying to describe it.
Feel free to describe this gentleman.
Oh, my God. Jesus Christ. Oh,
I get a like a competitive ice skater vibe from him.
His enthusiasm is giving me a gallstone.
Yep.
Heartily
whitened teeth.
Yeah, this is a man with about 4 foot of quiff, of quiffed hair, and I would assume about $70,000 worth of beauty products standing behind him. I like his shirt.
There you go.
See,
we can't be nice.
Florally pattern that I wouldn't mind purchasing. I'm going to email him, see where that came from.
Well, good luck trying to track him down. I have a feeling it's going to be hard to get a hold of him later.
Right.
Now, hold
in your
mind.
It's what we call foreshadowing in the business, kids.
Hold in your mind, if you will, the picture of Sushitsa. The sashimi pizza restaurant, which closed only several months later. A young Sydney entrepreneur who promised to, quote, take the burden off property owners and give them an awesome experience as he managed their homes and units as Airbnb rentals, has closed shop, owing millions of dollars to clients across the country who signed up to a scheme.
Cool.
Callum Forbes, chief executive and co-founder. I love it when...
I love seeing shit on LinkedIn.
Some fucking idiot with a business card who's called himself a chief executive or CEO of Mindset Incorporated. Which I do out of my parents' spare bedroom.
Mind Blaster at Funcorp. I don't know.
Callum Forbes, chief executive and co-founder of a company called And Chill. Wooed client property owners with a sunny sales pitch saying he would make sure they received higher returns on their short-term Airbnb rentals. Quote, you can enjoy your vacations with your friends and families while the managers will look after your property, he boasted in a glossy company blurb. I wonder, and I haven't read any further into this at the moment, but my understanding of Airbnb as a concept is that you have a property and you sign up to Airbnb and you post some photos and you say, I'm going to rent this thing out for this much money. If it's advertised through Airbnb, all the bookings are made through Airbnb, the paying is done through Airbnb, and then no one else is really involved, and that's their entire business model, is that they are taking the need for there to be agents out of the equation?
Yeah. It's a website, and someone pays you several hundred dollars to come into your house and come on every surface.
Yep.
And you get to keep most of those several hundred dollars and buy a quad bike.
Excellent. Excellent. Because normally I got to pay someone to come in and come on all my stuff.
That's not true. I'd do it for free.
How much of the cum do I get to keep?
God.
Yeah, I got one rule when you come here, and that is that you do not squeegee the cum off anything before you get out of here.
Andrew's house is so gross, guys.
Waving that black backlight around. Looking like a Jackson Pollock. So, yeah, I kind of don't understand how anyone would look at this and think to themselves, oh, so I will pay this guy for a service on top of Airbnb as a service, and also somehow it will increase the amount of money that I'm getting from this?
Yeah, what you want, I think classically with all things, is more layers. Each new layer brings more money.
To someone, yes.
Oh. No, that's true.
Well, 2 years after the hassle-free service offered by Mr. Forbes, I hope that's not his real name. It'd be so good if he gave himself the fake name of
Mr.
Forbes.
Mr. Forbes. Yeah, hi, my name's Mr. Business Insiders.
That's it. Well, hi, I'm Mr. Fortune 500 here to do make a booking with you. So 2 years after the hassle-free service offered by Mr. Fortune 500 started, the Airbnb experience has turned sour for 940 clients who say they have lost sums ranging from $20,000 to $100,000.
Oh, no.
And Chill owes property owners at least $3.6 million in rental payments and more to other creditors now that the company is put into the hands of an administrator. McGrath-Nickel, the administrator in charge of the failed company's affairs, said in a report to creditors that the failure of Mr. Forbes and former director Jeffrey Feng to maintain books and records leads to a presumption of insolvency.
Oh, wow.
A presumption of insolvency. Fantastic. That's, you know, the company, like the administrator has just been like, oh, so your documents extend to like you handing over the password to your Gmail account? And that's about it? Wow.
I didn't think we mentioned. This guy looks like he's about 14. The concept of having $3.6 million or whatever it was, let alone managing and then losing that much of someone else's money is just terrifying to me. Like, is there just a part of their brain that just switches off and they just don't think about it after that point? Like, how do you get to that point? I mean, I know the effect of, like, you know, snowballs that kind of unintentionally drive a Ponzi scheme, right? But, like, the concept that you're going, like, yep, I'm a man about town. My name's Mr. Forbes, and I'm going to manage millions of dollars, and that's fine. How does that happen? How do people have that, like, self-confidence?
Too many people watched Wolf of Wall Street? God, I don't know. And damn, they missed the part where it was all a crime. Yeah,
they just watched, like, the first hour of it.
Yeah, they're
like,
they went, wow.
Wow, everything must have turned out great.
Look,
the 80s were cool.
I think if there's something that we all learn over and over, it's that, like, there is really genuinely an element of fake it till you make it in the business world, all that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that said, let me read this next paragraph to you and see if this starts to produce any kind of anxiety nightmares for you. The report from the administrator says that the director and former director may be personally liable for all accounts. During more than 2 years as rental agent, Ann Chill took numerous Airbnb bookings on behalf of property clients and estimated its income at $20 million. Through a related company called Ann Chill Property Management, Ann Chill was meant to forward to its clients the funds it received from Airbnb minus an agreed commission for agent services.
Yep, that sounds pretty much as
sounds you like would, the model, right?
Absolutely. And I'm assuming that's what also happened.
As months passed and payments stopped, clients said they were told to be patient. they remained unsure about when their properties were rented out and what daily or weekly rates were being charged on their behalf by Anschill. So, they just stopped talking to anyone. They just kept renting these people's property out and taking the money in from them, but not giving any of it back to the people who owned them.
Mm-hmm. And not keeping any record.
Anything about it.
That rules.
Oh, my goodness. Merva Crinian. Merva Crinian, a Sydney-sider who offered her Launceston unit on Airbnb through Anschill from January to April this year, said she went with the company because she had no time to manage her property.
I've just got all this property, Andrew. What am I going to do with it?
I'm not sufficiently making money hand over fist from these fucking properties. Just all of these things that you read about, all these people who are so fucking hard done by, and it's like, it wouldn't be enough to just rent your surplus apartment out to somebody like a fucking normal landlord.
Mm-hmm. Or sell it to somebody who's going to fucking live in it, you prick.
God damn it.
Mervin.
Miss Crinian said she complained when payments stopped early on. Well, you would, wouldn't you? It was all excuses.
I was expecting free money, and now I have none money. Please give me.
Oh, hell yeah. They said it takes at best 60 days to get the money from the booking platform. Then they said there's a delay because we missed a deadline, or we have to wait for the next report. Eventually, they didn't take my calls and contact ceased. Now, what I was going to say to your questions earlier, Theo, is like, I have experience as a young and foolish man with getting a job like straight out of school, where I was making a reasonable income, but also I had like no overheads of any kind and could just spend money freely.
Mm-hmm.
And banks were like, would you like a credit card? And you go,
like,
okay.
Hell yeah.
And if you want to like buy a car or something, you go, can I have money for a car?
I love being like told as like a 20-year-old, like the bank's like, hey, so basically your credit card's too small. You look like a fucking dipshit right now. You and your tiny dick credit card. Why don't you crank that shit up? We'll give you the $20,000 credit card. And as like a young, foolish person, you're supposed to go, yeah, that means more money. Right?
You'd think?
But actually, it's the opposite.
So, like, yeah, my experience with this, and I should make a note and say, in this, like, I know that predatory lending exists and everything, but I'm just a fucking idiot. Yeah. I'm just a huge dumbass about money and all that sort of stuff. Especially, like I said, as a very young person with, like, no responsibilities or anything like that. So, I ran up... ran up a credit card and a loan, and was also really good at like smoking heaps of weed every day and really bad at remembering to pay bills for things and all that sort of stuff, and wound up running up, you know, tens of thousands of dollars of debt. And eventually the bank went, we're just going to give this to a debt collector now. And the debt collector called me every day, and I went, I'm just going to stop answering the phone. Because at that particular point of my life and where I was at and how I was feeling about things, it was like, you know what's easier than confronting this situation and formulating a way to deal with it is to just never answer my phone again.
It's flawless, really.
Flawless plan. And it took me many, many years to get myself out of the hole and all that sort of stuff, and a lot of help from people that I know a lot of other people don't have access to and all that sort of stuff. But like... yeah, my whole situation of I'm in over my head and I'm just going to cease contact with these people that I've made promises to was in the tens of thousands of dollars region. It was not in the multi-million dollars of regions. And that shit is pretty wild. Oh, no. And but of course, again, there's also a difference between one dumbass who's taken a bunch of money from a bank and not given it back. I don't know if people feel that bad about that one.
No, it's a victimless crime.
A victimless crime versus, say, a couple with 6 properties that they had managed by Ann Chill.
Also a victimless crime. Actually, this guy rules. Who Fuck said it.
They
He's taken...
They believe they lost about $100,000. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, no. I have to sell one of my 6 properties to make up the difference for the free cash I was supposed to get from this guy.
I've got a perfect capper on this. Oh, questions have been directed at Mr. Forbes about funds owing. He told The Australian yesterday he could not make any comment as it was in the hands of an administrator. He said he was, quote, not working and had no involvement in any other business ventures. Mm-hmm. Asked about his profile on LinkedIn, where he described himself as having studied, quote, Juris Doctor degrees at University of Sydney and having, quote, graduated in 2015, he said that this information was incorrect.
Cool.
Oh.
Don't you love her? We've talked about it on the show. I think from like a clinical perspective, you have to admire like a clinical fraudster. Like a pathological like liar.
Just a big time scam. And and you know as well that like you know that the way that the business world works, you'll probably just be able to like declare bankruptcy and then start a new business in a few years.
Sure, why not?
Oh, that's fantastic. I love it. I love it. Hey, should we take some letters from the mailbag?
Absolutely.
We got a bunch of letters from our friends. Ask for questions about
friends.
About whatever. Questions about whatever. So let's see him. Lover of the show, Chronicles of Girl Dick, says, what's the best? Just going to move on. Girl Dick, it's the best kind.
Mm-hmm.
What's the best oil for cooking in general?
I think they've really messed up with the last 2 words there.
In general?
Because I don't feel like there is a general case with cooking with oil, right? It really depends on... I don't think we've got enough information as to what they're cooking.
What are you cooking? I'm going to give an answer. My answer is rice bran oil.
Sure. I don't own rice bran oil. What are you using that for?
All kinds of jazz. Just your general stuff. High smoke point.
You got to get that smoke point up there.
Neutral flavor.
Hmm.
Good all rounder. It's the best all rounder.
I mean, I'm no oil expert. I know that people certainly make the mistake of using olive oil for everything because you buy a big old tin of it and then you go, I'm going to cook stir fry.
Yep, but, that was me in the past.
But classically, you want that wok to be super hot, especially if you're on gas. And your olive oil is just not going to give you your performance. But I've just got a big old thing of vegetable oil out the back for the barbecue. Someone's probably going to tell me how wrong that is. I don't know. I'm not great. But I do like the taste of a good olive oil in and on things, pasta and bread and that sort of thing. So it really depends on what you're going for.
Like a bit of oleo, as those people.
Oh, all right. What's oleo and who are those people?
Well, I believe it's Italian for oil, and those people are Italians.
No further questions.
Sweet, sweet lover of the show, Dave. G'day, Dave. Asks,
Dave.
What menu item do you find is the most consistently disappointing, regardless of venue? For me, it is nachos. I think nachos is a pretty good pick there, to be honest.
I'm trying to think.
I just basically, I basically don't order like pasta in restaurants for that reason. Mm. I feel like the only time I would ever eat pasta at a restaurant is like if I was in what was supposed to be a very good Italian restaurant, and I think you know how I feel about those people.
All right.
And, or if I was like actually in Italy or something like that. But beyond that, I feel like...
Oh, they got pasta in Italy now.
Yeah. Oh, I believe we export it there. But yeah, I think like pasta for me is the one where unless it's being made by someone very good in a good place, possibly with fresh pasta or whatever, then I don't really need to hear about that shit. I can make pasta at home. It's fine.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Because like I think like your mid-level kind of like Vapiano's or whatever, it's not good. And like you said, you can make that thing at home, whereas I don't think I could make like, say, take like the same price point, but like a grilled burger. I don't think I could reproduce those results at home. But I could absolutely.
But it's a lot of effort.
But it's a lot of effort, right? But like, yeah, pasta at a good place. I'll get pasta from a nice place if we're going out, like, you know, once a year for the anniversary or something. We went to...
you've only got one anniversary a year?
Just the one. I organized it so that everyone on the polycule, it all happens on the same date. It's like a... It's like the horse's birthday. we all tick over to the next year on the same day. You know, you get a nice, like... gnocchi or something. I think for me, noodles always come out like
Asian noodles. Is that what
you're
talking
about? Yeah, like a beef and black bean or something. They always come out at like 4,000 degrees.
Yeah,
there's like 4 kilos of them, and I eat like half of it, and I go, I'm full of steam now and not much else.
See, I was going to, in answering this question, I was going to invert the premise and say that the most consistently disappointing thing for me to ever make at home is Asian food. And I know that that's an extremely broad category.
That is very reductive.
I'll make it slightly more specific to Chinese food, to things like anything that's like, you know, any kind of stir fry, fried rice, anything like that. That is just a thing that I feel like I just can never get.
But you shouldn't have time to be disappointed by like a stir fry, because stir fry is the thing that it's like, I've got a whole bunch of shit in my fridge, I'm going to chop it all up and I'm going to cook it in a hot pan.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess, have to talk to you about your strategy here. We'll cover this.
I've just never quite get it there. I always kind of like... overdo all the veggies, and like it all just comes out kind of gluggy. And
I'm worried now. This is troubling me. It should be
crisp. It should be.
I'm coming around. I'm going to show you how to cook stir fry.
Look, I get the idea. Just can't get it right.
I don't know if you do.
Sounds like I don't.
This guy doesn't know how to cook stir fry.
No. Let me see. Friend of the show, Blake, says, why am I constantly seeing news stories about James Packer's new boat?
This sounds like a case for Boat Watch.
Boat Watch.
I have no idea what he's talking about, by the way.
Boat Watch. There we go. I found it. Well, it turns out that Australian casino tycoon James Packer recently let go of a considerable amount of shares in his Crown Resorts company for a reported US $1.8 billion. $1.8 billion. I'm doing the pinky.
That's a good voice. Just make that up.
The pinky's up to my mouth, the corner of my mouth. To celebrate, he has decided to treat himself to a custom yacht from Italian super yacht builders, Benetti. It all comes back to the Italians. The longest yacht Benetti has ever constructed at 354 feet.
Oh, my God.
It's about 110 meters long. The US $200 million, or Australian $289 million creation, is named IJE Fucking hell. It's named IJE after Packer's three children, Indigo, Jackson, and Emmanuel.
Okay, this week's Crime Pass. If you see this dipshit's boat, it is legal to swim up to the side of it with one of those old-timey crank drills. You know the ones that, like, your grandparents had?
Yep.
And you kind of just, like... Just
bore some little holes in the side of there?
And you just put some little holes. It's... Look, it's completely legal to drill a hole. It's completely legal to drill 10 holes.
It's probably in international waters.
Yeah. Put some holes in that bad boy.
Yeah, fuck this guy. I also got to say, look, I got two beautiful daughters and I love them. And I'm not about, like, naming shit after your kids. I'm not about getting, like, tattoos of your kids' names and shit. I don't understand that.
Yeah, it's like getting a tattoo of your girlfriend. What if you don't like them after a while?
Well, like, I used to work at a place where there was this guy and he had tattoos up both arms and, like, on each arm there was like a tattooed set of baby footprints, like, you know, when they do like the molding of a baby's feet.
Yep.
And also portraits of the children and also the children's names in like huge fucking black block letters, like the A Clockwork Orange font.
Not
the one from the poster, but the one from the one from the milk lounge. You know,
Not sure, but you're right. It is,
and I'm just like
strange.
Were you going to forget?
I mean, they're proud, but I mean, maybe it's just because, you know, I'm the way that I am, and that amount of outward emotion would fill me with shame and dread, even about a legitimately positive thing. It's very strange to me, but if that's cool by you, then that's...
Yeah, good. It's not cool by me, though. Shit sucks.
All right.
It's like every MMA fighter who has their own last name tattooed on them. I don't understand it. Why? Why?
It makes it easier for the commentators.
Extremely weird. I guess so. So yeah, fuck James Packer and his spectacular Giga Yacht, which is powered by twin MTU 3,800 HP diesel engines. With a top speed of 18.5 knots or 34 kilometers an hour. Pathetic. Drive faster than that in my car.
That's true.
And my car did not cost $289 million. So, who's an idiot now? James Packer. More like, what's a good insulting name for James Packer?
Shit Dacker.
Yes. That's way better than anything I was coming up with then.
All right. Well, can't win them all.
Shit Dacker. Shit Dacker's good. Shit. Okay.
Friend
of the show, Space Dom, says, G'day, Bunter. If you were on the pointy end of a nationwide manhunt on account of murder...
And I am.
Could you think of a more embarrassing shirt to be wearing in your photo than one that says, A Wild Cthulhu Appears? Have you... You know these guys?
No.
The two guys who did the shooting in the States?
No? Is this the Garlic Bread Festival thing?
No, this is before that.
Oh, I don't know about this.
I feel like all the shootings are too much to keep up with. The fucking names on these guys. Oh, I think they were Canadian. Were they Canadian? Let me check this out. How do you like the names on these? Ready? What we know about Cam McLeod, K-A-M, McLeod, and Briar Schmigelski. Briar and Cam, extremely fucking white Gen Z names. 19 and 18 years old. They are the subjects of a national manhunt after RCMP named them. I believe that's the Royal Canadian Mounted Police.
Yep. Very named funny them. That they have that.
That's still good. It's mm-hmm. still good. Named them as suspects in the double homicide of Lucas Fowler and China Deese, and charged with second-degree murder in the death of a Vancouver man. Fowler, 23, an Australian, and Deese, 24, an American, were discovered shot to death along the side of an Alaska highway. I think he was like the son of a police chief, former police chief, I think. The Australian guy.
Mm.
Which is why it turned up in the news here. But yeah, so they've been doing a killing spree. You might be really shocked to learn that there's photos of the two of them in their Nazi regalia.
Huh.
They met each other on Steam. We're all very, very shocked. Guys who collected Nazi armbands and Hitler Youth knives and watched a lot of YouTube. His main influences were video games and YouTube. And, of course, they have been described as normal, quiet, nice kids.
Hmm. To answer your question, I would say it's probably the shirt that is more embarrassing to be wearing as a subject of a nationwide manhunt would be the shirt that Ben was wearing the night that I first met him.
Please explain.
Not just a sick burn on Ben. We went to Halloween. I was dressed as Manny Calavera from Grim Fandango.
Of course you were.
Ben had a shirt that was deliberately about four sizes too small for him. Just like tearing at every seam, nipples protruding, very gross, with the words "gay hooters" on the front. So I would say a deliberately too small white shirt with the words "gay hooters" would be more embarrassing to wear as the subject of a manhunt.
It's pretty good. Although, I want you to take a look at the picture that I've now shown you of suspect Cam McLeod.
Oh, God. He looks like about 40 people I know. Just horrible facial hair.
So I do need to point out that I did say...
Sysadmin ass-looking dude.
Yeah. I did say a wild Cthulhu, but to be clear, it is a wild Cthulhu.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a...
It's sort of like a cat that's got tentacles.
Cthulhu, and it's got little cute kitty ears.
Mm.
And that's what
which,
you wear.
Which really, I mean, Cthulhu is supposed to be unknowable and indescribable, really.
I feel like the cat is...
You made it in a little cute little kitty.
The cat ears are making it easier to describe, I've got to say.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I hope we've adequately answered that question, mm-hmm. I guess.
I'm going to find a photo of that. We'll post it.
Dear friend of the show, Rob, says, we here in America consider Australia something of a summer country. While we in the US are bursting into flames, can you help cool my brain with some Australian favourite winter activities?
Oh, boy.
And how cold does it get in Brisbane in winter, Theo?
Oh, my God. It is brutal. I think my favorite winter activities when it gets cold enough for there to be like dew on the ground, just crazy stuff. You hop out of the door, but not before putting on a singlet, a shirt, and a hoodie. So you really got to get rugged up to head out that door. Process can take upwards of 30, 40 seconds. And then you sort of like skip along the road. Maybe it might be one of the 10 or so days when it's cold enough to blow mist. Just truly magical stuff, really. I'd say it gets down to probably about, what, 4 degrees minimum here? I think that's it. I think we had a really cold day and it was like 3. It snowed out west.
Ooh, that's exciting.
Like twice in the last couple of years. But that, yeah. Whereas, like, you know, I went to see my in-laws in Tasmania not a while ago, and you fly into Hobart, and they're just like, oh, you can just drive up to that mountain, the huge mountain that overlooks everything that we do, and you drive up there about 5-10 minutes, and then suddenly you're in a winter wonderland. Very weird to me that you can just go somewhere where it snows. Strange and unnatural.
Last weekend, we took our kids to the snow for the first time. It was about 40 minutes from our house. We took them to a place called Curran Forest. And it was a pretty good deal because there are other snowy mountains near here, but it takes like, you know, sort of 3 hours to get up one of them from where we live, you know. And then you gotta like get all your snow gear, and if you want to have skis and shit, you got to have all them, unless you want to rent all of them, which is pretty wild expensive. And if you want to be there for the day, you got to buy like ski lift passes and all that kind of thing. And it all gets very expensive very quickly. Whereas this place just has like a little baby snowfield. And they also have a whole bunch of man-made snow things, so that if it doesn't happen to be snowing at the time, they just make some snow. So you can book out ahead of time, and it's like $20 a head, and you get a 2.5 hour session in their little snow play area, and it's got like little runs for tobogganing and stuff like that. And that was pretty perfect as far as like, and yeah, and you could like rent a toboggan for $5, you know. And that was pretty perfect as far as driving somewhere that was 40 minutes away. Our kids getting to go and do snow stuff for the first time. And then, like clockwork, about an hour into it, our 3-year-old Maeve said, "All right, I'm done.
I'm bored."
Yep, she was just like,
This shit sucks.
Want to go home?
Give me an iPad.
No, she was just like, "It's cold and I'm tired now." Huh. I was like, "Yes, you're 3. And you're standing in some snow. Of course you're fucking cold and tired. You've been running up and down a hill over and over to slide down it on your face instead of using the toboggan that I rented for $5.
Hmm.
As is her way. But I was like, that's fine because I didn't pay like $2,000 for a fucking weekend at the snow or some bogus shit like that. I paid $20 for you to come and do this. So that's totally fine. You got your $20 worth.
Yeah, wow.
And Eleanor was like, I too am sick of this shit.
Yeah, snow sucks. I first saw snow when I was like 27. And then kind of got up in the morning and there was snow over and you go, this is magical. And then 1 hour later, you're like, this is cold and wet. And it fucking sucks. My feet are cold. Cold all over, and I'm also wet. Combines two factors of being cold and being wet. Two of my least favorite things as someone from the middle of Queensland.
Well, I feel like there's also a difference between, like, if you do want to, you know, go and go skiing or something like that. Like, you know, I was talking to my folks about this on the weekend because we used to go skiing up those mountains, but when I was a kid we'd just go and do day trips because going and doing accommodation and stuff like that's all too expensive. Instead, you just do the life hack of getting into your car at like 3 a.m. and driving there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we were sort of talking about that and saying like, oh, if you go up there and it has snowed and the weather's pretty nice and stuff and you're wearing ski gear and just skiing, you don't get wet because you're not like spending a bunch of time sitting in the snow or having a bunch of snow dumped on you or whatever.
Yeah, I think you're right.
There's a big difference between that and like the reality of living somewhere like, say, Chicago, where like a place where for a bunch of winter it will just snow.
Uh-huh.
And it's just there on the street, and you have yeah. to drive around in it, and you got to walk around in it, and you'll be trying to like walk down the street, just getting snowed on. We lived in the States when I was very young, when I was a baby. I'm doing.
Uh-huh. What's another? Did you make up two voices in one episode?
Two characters. I'll explain their backstories to you later.
Sure.
And yeah, so when I was a baby.
This is truly a incredibly well drawn character. Can't wait to hear more.
Yeah, we lived in St. Louis, and my mum was always talking about like, yeah, you want to go out, so you'd have to like go out and start up your car first, so that it can run for long enough that it's not below freezing inside the car, and then you take your baby and your toddler, and you put them in their clothes, and then you put them in like a layer of thick stuff on top of that, and then you put them into ski clothes on top of that, and they're like snow gear and everything, so they can be outside in it. Then you take them out and you get them in the car, and then you drive across town to the shopping center, and you park, and you take your kids inside, and then you start to strip them out of all the layers of stuff so that they can be in a place where they're blasting the heating because it's snowing outside.
It's a whole pack of bullshit just to dress yourself, let alone tiny children.
Oh, that's what we were saying, like, when we were at that thing on the weekend, there were people with little babies and stuff, and we're like, fuck that.
Mm.
The kids don't know what the fuck is going on. They're not having a good time. You got to rug them up in all this shit. Matt, like, I was just looking at people with, like, you know, 6-month-old, 12-month-old babies in snowsuits and stuff and thinking, like, how are you going to change that motherfucker's nappy? Come on. Just a whole thing. Whereas at least we've got
bring kids. A baby to the snow. Get real.
And bring a baby to the snow. They don't know what the fuck is happening. You think you're making memories? They don't remember shit.
No. I barely make memories now.
That's right.
I don't remember shit.
Well, luckily, we've been recording all this, so you can come back and remember it later.
Oh, God. I kind of had, like, this bad feeling that the last episode, the main episode, my audio wouldn't work.
Oh, me
cause
too.
Because the UI going weird. And I was just thinking, like, fuck, I'm not going to do any of this again if I remember it. That's terrible. And so, like, memory can be good and bad, I feel. If I remembered that stuff we were talking about, I would not talk about it again, even if you paid me, which they weren't because it was on the main episode, not like this one, where our lovely listeners give us money to do this for some reason.
Thank you, friends.
Thank you.
Thank you, friends, lovers and wives of the show. And on that note, on the note of saying thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to get out of here. So thanks for your time, everybody. Thanks for listening. Thanks for your questions. We'll catch you next week. Bye-bye.
See ya.